This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week. On the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR, here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Well, this is Mike O'Neill. Mike Russell is at the moment absent, but he will join us later. We are here with Lori Roberts, ace columnist for the Arizona Republic, and she has been writing very interestingly about a number of interrelated issues that we're going to talk about. Dark money, what that is, and specifically I want to talk, and let's set the stage. We hear talk about something called issue advocacy ads. What's an issue advocacy ad, and how's that different from a political commercial?
Well, it's not different at all from my point of view, especially in an election year. But an issues advocacy ad is one that seeks to educate you on an issue, as opposed to a political ad that seeks to get you to vote a certain way for something, against something, etc. And what you will see pop up this year, and you are already seeing, is issues-oriented ads that will say things like, Scott Smith is a guy who is for Obamacare. Well, okay, Scott Smith is a guy who happens to be running for governor, and people who don't want to see him elected or want to see one of his opponents elected will run an ad like that and say, hey, that wasn't an election ad. It was an issues-oriented ad. All we're doing is trying to educate people about who Scott Smith is. Whether it's true or not, doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, and to me, about the, I think the only line that you can't cross, you can run an ad that basically says that, you know, Joe Jones is a slime bag and he did this and he did this and he did this. That's all issue advocacy, as long as you don't have the concluding line that says, well, don't vote for Joe.
Well, you saw a Jones. Classic example of that actually in the 2010 election, when a group that had one of those mom, pop, and apple pie names like Americans for Happiness or People Who Love Dogs and Cats and Puppies and Kittens, came up with a set of educational issues-oriented ads explaining why Tom Horn was a bad guy and things that he had done as superintendent of public instruction. That basically, they made him out to be just a real bad guy. They never mentioned that, oh, Tom Horn happens to be running for Attorney General of the state of Arizona.
Because if they had, that would have been a political advertising and it would have gone in a different basket.
Exactly. So they did these ads that just railed against the guy. You didn't know who they were because they had this innocuous name that sounded perfectly fine. It wasn't until a year later that you found out through tax filings that the group was paid, it was really the Democratic Attorneys General Association.
Lo and behold, surprise, surprise.
Right. But because they were an issues-oriented ad, they did not have to register as a political campaign, and they did not have to tell you who they were, which, of course, they didn't want you to know, because as a voter, had you known that that was the source, then you would have considered the source of that ad and taken that into consideration when you listened about how this man was such a scumbag.
And it's interesting, because the opponents of campaign finance reform for years have said, well, we don't need to regulate spending. All we need to do is have transparency. But with these issue ads, so-called issue ads, in quotes,
right,
you don't even have transparency.
You don't have transparency, and they've known that. A few years ago, I watched a race in the city of Scottsdale where the mayor was up and a couple council people. A committee of the Scottsdale Chamber of Commerce put out these beautiful four-color brochures in which and there were like 12 or 13 people running. They put out these brochures in which they extolled the virtues of certain candidates, the one that they wanted to win for mayor, and the three people that they wanted to win on the city council. Now, those four people, had they all been elected, would have been a majority of that city council, because it's a seven-person city council. But they called these ads, which they spent a lot of money on, educational ads. They were absolutely election ads, and we wanted to know who's behind them. It's fine. Say whatever you want. I just have a right to know who it is that's doing the talking, so I can consider the source. And they said, no, this is issues-oriented campaigning. That thing actually was sued on, and ultimately they prevailed in court. A judge said, oh, yes, that's issues-oriented ads, because they didn't say one of the magic words,
like
quote,
vote
unquote,
for. If you don't say vote for,
vote against, help defeat, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it insults our intelligence.
My inference from that, the Supreme Court in doing this has to have been either secretly in favor of unlimited campaign contributions or hopelessly naive to say that you can run unlimited, unannounced in terms of its sources, ads against somebody, talking about what a slime bag they are. As long as you don't say the magic words, vote against the guy, it's not a campaign ad, which is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And they ought to. I think that you ought to have to consider the time in which the ad is put forth. If you put forth the ad midterm 2 years before they're coming up for the election,
they're not going to do that.
Of course they're not. It's going to be in the weeks leading up to. The Tom Horn ad that I mentioned was in October, I believe, of 2010. It was very clear what was going on. He was in a very tight race for Attorney General. And don't get me wrong, he had his own set of dirty tricks that were going on at the same time. But that's not the point. I'm for transparency on both sides all around. Just let us see who's paying for the ad.
So you alluded to, I think we've just had in the last week or so, the first ad of the 2014 season of this ilk.
We have.
And the victim was Scott Smith. Tell us that story.
That was an ad that was taken out by a group called the Legacy Foundation. Who knew that people in Des Moines, Iowa, were oh so interested in what Scott Smith is doing. Now, so they have this set of ads. It was about $180,000 worth of an ad campaign in which they talk about Scott Smith is head of an organization that is very liberal and embraces Obamacare and has embraced limits on the Second Amendment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Scott Smith is the head, or was the head at that time, of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Which
and that was the allegedly liberal group, right?
Right,
the U.S. Conference on Mayors.
Exactly.
Which I think you either automatically or semi-automatically, I think almost every mayor in America joins this.
Yes, absolutely. So the ad was basically to say, Scott Smith, this guy who's the mayor of Mesa, is for these things like Obamacare. Tell Scott Smith that he should run Mesa differently. The U.S. Conference of Mayors should be more like Mesa. Well, now, this was an obvious, for one thing, Scott Smith this week resigned his position as mayor of Mesa.
So nobody's going to tell him anything that he should do or shouldn't do as mayor of Mesa.
Because the point of the ad, of course, is that Scott Smith resigned as mayor because he wants to run for governor. And that's what this ad was all about.
So the timing suggests clearly it's a campaign.
Yeah, and
we will come back to that.
Okay.
After the break, we will connect the dots further. This is the Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We're here with Lori Roberts, and we're talking what really I think is the opening salvo of the 24 campaign. It was a so-called issue ad. It was direct and clearly an anti-Mayor Smith ad. Now former, as of this afternoon, I believe, Mayor Smith of Mesa, running for governor. And we're connecting the dots on where that money came from, who did it, and gets back to Arizona.
The interesting thing about it is twofold. Is why suddenly would some organization want to run an educational ad about Scott Smith calling into question his stewardship of the U.S. Conference of Mayors at the very time he's about to resign that position? And number two, why is a Des Moines, Iowa-based foundation called the Legacy Foundation so interested in what happens in the city of Mesa, where Scott Smith, of course, is now no longer mayor? All of this the week before he resigns. The obvious answer is that they're interested because he is running for the Republican nomination for governor of Arizona in a very crowded primary and is seen as probably one of the top tier candidates. There are several. It's very clear why they'd want to do that. But again, going back to that issues-oriented ad, we have no right to know as voters and taxpayers and citizens of Arizona what the connection is under state law, because it's an issues ad. They were educating us about Scott Smith. Well, you look a little deeper, and the first thing that you find is that Doug Ducey, another candidate for governor, another Republican candidate for governor, has hired a media guy to handle his ad campaign this year by the name of Larry McCarthy. Larry McCarthy is very well known from the Willie Horton ad that
Backtrack. Everybody, if you're not old enough, you may not remember that one, but tell us about the Willie Horton ad.
Well, basically, it was an ad that sunk Michael Dukakis when he was running for president because it said Willie Horton is a guy that Michael Dukakis let out of prison early, and it sunk his campaign.
And it was and there was a picture of a big, very threatening-looking black guy.
Yeah.
Who was Willie Horton?
Who, frankly, was a very threatening black guy. Because, as I recall, what happened is he got out of prison and then he killed somebody.
Indeed.
So that was one of those really tough ads. And that was Larry McCarthy. So Larry McCarthy is doing the campaign for Doug Ducey. But turns out Larry McCarthy also just finished an ad campaign for the Legacy Foundation on behalf of a candidate running in the Republican primary in Nebraska, I think, for the U.S. Senate. So Larry McCarthy is also working at the same time for Legacy Foundation.
He's working for Legacy and he's working for Doug
at the same time that he's working for Ducey. Now, he says that it's a complete coincidence. He had no idea that Legacy was doing an ad in Arizona against one of his guys' primary opponents. So you take him at face value. You don't know. You can't know.
That's the whole point of dark money is you never know, right?
So I continued to look for public records to find out, you know, who is this Legacy group and what is their connection to Arizona politics. And so you pull their 990s, which is an IRS form that nonprofits must file, and you find out the most recent one is still from 2012. And first on the list of people that they gave money to, $80,000, Center for Arizona Policy. Now, Center for Arizona Policy is run by Kathy Herod. Kathy Herod happens to be on the kitchen cabinet of who? Doug Ducey's campaign. So Scott Smith is pretty well convinced, and his people are convinced, that this was a hit from the Ducey folks, if not the actual campaign, but people beholden to Ducey.
There's at a minimum familiar fingerprints.
Right, and Ducey says, absolutely not, we're not involved. Do we know that he is involved? No, we don't. And that's the whole point of dark money, is that we can never know. And the problem is that you can pick up great big globs of mud. Doesn't have to be true. Doesn't have to be fair, because your name's not going to be attached to it. So you just lob it out there at the other candidate, whoever he is, and you never get your fingers dirty.
And I think that's an important point, because when you're making an accusation in a political ad, you're supposed to be upfront and make this statement. I endorse, what's the phraseology? I endorse this ad. When it's a third party doing it, you can get away with saying anything. If it's your campaign that does it and you're on camera saying, I endorse this statement, then you're held accountable for what you say.
Yeah, and you're going to see a lot more of this year, because not only because of these issues advocacy campaigns, but also the 501c4s that have formed, the independent nonprofits that come along that are supposed to be social welfare nonprofits, but all they do is run these independent anonymous campaigns, usually attacking someone. I believe that you will see almost every major candidate will have an independent, so-called independent campaign, either for him or against him, working in this election.
Well, there was a court decision this week relating to Tom Horn and his coordination or lack of coordinate, because that's when you have an independent campaign, to be independent, you're not supposed to coordinate with
them. And the reason for that is simple, because independent campaigns can spend as much as they want. You can't limit what corporations can spend on a campaign. But candidates are limited. So you separate the two and you say, fine, you're an independent campaign, go to it. Go spend your money, but you better not be connected to that candidate in any way. You better not be coordinating with him, and you better not be his secret little slush fund to put out attack ads. That's the way the law says it's supposed to work.
So Tom Horn was in court this week, however, on the subject of the alleged coordination that he did or did not do with the campaign on his behalf.
Right. County attorneys in this state, both Republican, have found sufficient cause to believe that he, the attorney general of this state, violated those rules in 2010. Think about it this way. We're coming up to the end of a campaign. It's neck and neck between Tom Horn and Felicia Rodellini. He's running out of money. She's probably also running out of money. He needs something out there fast to get him ahead. Lo and behold, one of his supporters resigns from his campaign committee and goes over to form a group, Business Leaders for Arizona, I think it was called. And she is forming this money, quickly raises $500,000, partly with his help, in my opinion, because he put forth where she should go get the money, but that may be legal. And then the day comes when she's working on this $500,000 ad campaign. It's going to be a hit piece on Felicia Rodellini. All day long during that day, as she's emailing back and forth with her campaign consultant, she's on the phone intermittently with Tom Horn. And you lay out when those phone calls are and when those emails are going back and forth as the ad's being finalized. And it raises a lot of questions about, was he involved in finalizing that ad? Well, two Republican county attorneys have said, yes, we believe he was, and hit him with a civil fine for this.
Now, Tom Horn says we were talking about entirely different things.
We were talking about a pending real estate deal. I was actually getting real estate advice from her. So picture it this way. One of the final drafts of the ad comes into her, Kathleen Wynn is her name, and comes into her email box. Here's the ad, here's the ad, here's the ad. So she's talking for 8 minutes to Tom Horn. While this is happening, the ad's coming in. She gets off the phone with Tom Horn, and 2 minutes later, she sends her revisions to the guy on the ad. One of the things she says is that we think that you're mentioning Felicia Rodolini's name too often and you're not mentioning Tom Horn's name enough. She had 2 minutes between the end of that phone call and when she sent the ad back. And so the question was raised, was he involved in coordinating with his campaign? Now, he has said steadfastly throughout, no, I was not. We were talking about a complex real estate deal I had going elsewhere that had nothing to do with this. So he appealed the ruling, and this week we got the response from the administrative law judge, and she said, you know, you say this thing and that sounds reasonable, and the people on the other side say it was this way. I can't really tell because I don't have the content of the conversation. Therefore, I'm going to recommend that Sheila Polk, the Yavapai County attorney, drop it for now. And she dismissed the fine against him.
My takeaway from that is, if that's the standard, then the only way you could have proof that you had coordinated is if you were foolish enough to tape record all the conversations.
Or you got a pipeline into the NSA and they were listening,
Yeah. You
know, because you'd have to know the content of their conversations based on that standard. So he is now, she could still pursue this to Superior Court if she wants to. I suspect she has 30 days to decide. I mean, maybe she'll pursue it, but it seems like it's not going to go anywhere if you have to have absolute proof of what was said in the meeting, and you can't. If that's
the standard, you've got circumstantial, and any right. lawyer will tell you, circumstantial evidence is often all you have. If that evidence right. is, however, compelling enough, then...
Well, there's two sets of evidence here. I mean, two things. The court of law, which said by a preponderance of the evidence he didn't do it. And then you've got the court of public opinion. And so we'll see what people say.
It may be a tougher, but my guess is that he is able to parlay that one into an assertion that, I've been exonerated.
Vindication is the word he's used.
That's absolutely. We'll come back and discuss other issues. We are in the think tank at News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
This is Mike O'Neill here with Lori Roberts, Arizona Republic columnist. We've been talking about campaign funding, dark money, and the like. I want to move over to sort of everything else that's going on in the legislature. And in the break, we were talking about empowerment scholarships.
Yeah, that's one of the big fights yet to be finished at the legislature. And if you follow them at all, you know that the Arizona legislature is not that enamored of public schools. They tried to come up with a voucher program a few years ago, and I think it was ultimately ruled unconstitutional. So they came up with a new plan.
Unconstitutional because I believe the usual basis is that's direct
money
state funding
going
of
to
private entities,
and religious
yeah.
schools. Yeah. So instead they came up with these empowerment scholarship accounts. Think about when you go to Fry's and you want to buy your son or daughter, say, a prepaid Visa card that'll have a certain amount of money on it. And so you give it to them and then they can use it wherever they go. Well, that's really what these are. You are a parent and you decide, I do not want my child in the public schools. I want to either homeschool them or I want to send them to a private school or a parochial school, whatever. So you go to the state and you say, if you're certain kinds of people, but this is just how it works. Only a few people right now qualify. You say, I want to take my kid out of the public schools and put them someplace else. So basically, they give you an amount of money and put it on one of those little cards and say, have at it. You can only spend that money for educational purposes, but basically they're giving you a credit card. that goes straight to the state.
And if I understand it, the way that gets around the constitutional provision is it's no longer the state supposedly providing the deciding where it goes, but rather
the parents. It's the parent.
But the state's providing the money.
Right, right. And this started after vouchers were found to be unconstitutional. In 2011, the legislature created this new program called Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, and it was for children who were seriously disabled in some way, mentally, physically, whatever, in such a way that the parents didn't feel that the public school system could meet their needs, and they wanted to go elsewhere. And it was a very narrowly targeted group of people. And I think most of us said, yeah, we should do that. If you've got, you know, a child who can learn better in this other environment, let's go for it.
Because maybe for kids like this, the public schools aren't really equipped.
Right, there are. Yeah, exactly. This is a very targeted small number of people. Well, then the legislature came back and they expanded it to parents of active or to children of active duty military and children of foster children, which was also kind of understandable because foster care kids are moving around
needs.
All the time. Right, right. And then they expanded it to anyone who goes to a school that's a rated D or maybe D minus by the Arizona Department of Education, so that they can get out of those things.
Bigger.
Okay. So currently we have about 761 children, I believe, who get these empowerment scholarship accounts. So far in the 2 years or 3 years that we've had them, we've spent $11.8 million out of the state general fund have gone to these parents to put on those little prepaid debit cards I was talking about. This year, there is a bill in the legislature and a big push, big push to expand the program from those 761 children to 25,000 children over the next 5 years. And then the idea would be...
Let's hear those. From 700 to 25,000. That's like a quick arithmetic,
right.
40 to 1 expansion.
Right. And then because the program siphons money directly out of the general fund, it's been capped at a certain amount that they can spend per year. But that cap ends in 2019, I believe. So the idea is that we're going to expand it to the 25,000 and eventually just take the cap off and it will apply to anyone in a public school.
And I'm thinking of that on two levels, too, in terms of the impact. On the one hand, if you focus on the individual parent and they say, my kid's in a really lousy school, I want to pull him out, you have a certain sympathy for that. On the other hand, you look at the school and a principal has a school that's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really stretching to get things done,
right.
And what this seems to me it does is completely undercuts their financing and
it
basically
does.
Creates a hopeless situation.
Well, it does. It does that, but also all of these people who say, "Well, why shouldn't the children of poor children be able to go to these nicer private schools? It would be a great thing." Well, the scholarship isn't that much. I've checked out some of the prices of some of the schools around the valley, and they are enormously expensive. There would be a huge gap between what you would get out of this empowerment scholarship account and what it really costs to go to those schools. I think what it basically is taking money, people who've already chosen to put their children in private schools, they can now apply for this and have the money sitting there.
They get there. Funded something. And I believe you said that that's some of what is occurring right now, that some of these people have not spent this money, but they're sitting on it.
And this is a very interesting point, because if the idea is that I need the money I want to take my child to private school, so give me my complement of the public school money so that I can put it in, go to private school. 21% of that money that has been accumulated in those accounts has not been spent. One student is sitting on $60,000. A bunch more are sitting on $20,000 apiece. It's not being spent.
And they're allowed to do that?
They're allowed to do that. Not only are they allowed to do that, the Department of Education is not allowed by law to ask them, how are you spending, why are you sitting on this money? The thinking is that some of them are just using it to save up for college tuition, because while you have to use the money for certain educational purposes, anything at the end of your educational time, what you would consider your usual time to be in school, which is upon college graduation or 4 years after high school, then whatever's left in that account you have to return. So I'm wondering how much of this is money that, say I already had my child at Brophy. I was already paying to go to Brophy, but now I've found out, hey, I can get this state money, so I'm going to go apply for the state money, put it in my empowerment scholarship fund, and I'm building up a nice little nest egg to send my child to college using what should be K through 12 funds.
And that suggests that those are not needy kids. Because if those were needy kids going to a school right now, they'd be using every penny.
Well, of course they would, but they're not. $2.1 million is sitting in these accounts of the $11.8 million that has been accumulated over the life of this program so far. So a fifth of the money is just sitting there. And as I said, one child has $60,000 in an account. And while the Department of Education is supposedly monitoring it to make sure that it is used appropriately, they can't ask, why aren't you using it? And you know, we don't know. It's just sitting there. Meanwhile, the public schools are starved for money.
They're, in effect, not only not auditing, they're precluded from doing so.
They can watch how it's spent. Presumably, if they see that money's being spent for, you know, parties instead of school books, they can call them on that. But they can't say, hey, why aren't you spending this money? Why is it sitting in an account?
Now, this is in my mind, I contrast this with the funding that they have been fighting over to expand CPS and their role.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the few things in the governor's budget that they didn't go for. They said the plan wasn't fleshed out enough and we're not going to fund that until.
Well, they funded part of it. The governor asked for about $83 million in new funding in this year's budget mostly to hire new caseworkers because the caseloads are so incredibly heavy. It's a joke. So she asked for $83 million. They gave her $57 million, and they said, hey, we might come back and give you more. They put this, I've never seen anything like it before. They put what they called a statement of intent into the budget that says, once you figure out what you want to do with the new and improved CPS, get back to us, and then we'll come back and look at it.
And this was the compromise when part of the legislature wanted to fund it, and the majority caucus didn't want it. Most of the majority caucus didn't want to fund it. They said, well, we'll maybe fund it.
Yeah, and so the governor has gone ahead and signed this budget with this letter, statement of intent, and all of the people working on the committee to create this new agency to say, oh, yes, 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 it's going to be great when we get, they've promised us that they'll come back and fund it. No, they've promised that they'll come back and look at it. And I just don't see where the leverage is for anybody to force this legislature to actually pony up the money that's going to be needed to fund this new agency other than public pressure. The legislative session will already have been done. All the bills are going to be in and signed. The budget's in and signed. You got a lame duck governor. Where's the leverage? What does she have to hold over their heads to say, do this or else?
The normal time when you have leverage is when you're holding out to pass the budget. You don't get my vote unless this is in.
Exactly.
And I'm going to hold things up until such time as you include something more of what?
Right. Ultimately, the only leverage that I can see will be public opinion and public pressure.
Well, we'll be back for a concluding session. This is The Think Tank on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
The ubiquitous Mike Russell has rejoined us. You missed a good show, Mike.
See, you're using your college words with ubiquitous. I'm trying to spell it, and I can't.
That means you're everywhere here.
Okay. Is that me?
Yeah.
All right.
All Mike Russell all the time.
K-M-I-K. All right. Yes. So, but Lori Roberts, one of my favorite people in the media biz, especially here locally, and you guys were talking some campaign finance.
You put all these things together, and you see the way some of these decisions have come down, and it's turned a lot of this campaign finance stuff into a fairy tale. The fairy tale being, if somebody somewhere pours unlimited money into a campaign that says what a sleaze Mike Russell is, and as long as they don't say the magic words at the end, don't vote for Mike Russell, that's considered an issue ad.
Yes.
Even if, suspiciously, these ads seem to come up just before the elections. We won't get any of these next year, but we'll get them this year. We just got the first one. It was an anti-Steve Smith ad, and Lori Roberts traced what she could trace about where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
But I am certain that's going to be the first of many. It's out there and it's conspicuous only because it's the very first.
Well, I think it's become that way. It's evolved. It's devolved, I would say, from, hi, my name is Mike Russell, and I want to be your congressman. I do this.
But that's a campaign ad. That's
normal. But it's devolved to even the campaign ads to Dr. Mike O'Neill likes to kill puppies. It's yeah. become that.
Yeah.
And I
and
don't,
it's not,
I,
I'm Mike Russell. It's, hey, I'm a friend of Mike Russell.
Yeah.
And he has nothing to do with this, but he's either a swell guy or an awful guy, depending on whether I like him or not.
But you put that at the end. Paid for by the friends of Mike Russell.
Or yeah. more likely paid for by Citizens for All Things Good.
Yay.
You know, Citizens for Good Government.
I like those
and,
guys.
Know.
I do like
you know,
those guys.
And here's the answer that a lot of people give to that. And it just, well, you know, I... People can understand that, and they can cut through it. I had an old advertising story I think I told once before here, but it warrants retelling. This was an old ad guy got into a cab in New York, and the cab driver asks him, you know, what do you do? And he said, well, I do advertising. The guy said, well, I don't let advertising influence me. And the guy's response is, well, what toothpaste do you use? He said, well, I use Gleam.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, why do you use Gleam? And the response was, well, because I can't brush between meals, which was, of course, the exact content of the Gleam advertising
That's
campaign.
That's funny, yes.
You got the – nobody likes to think
– Because 4 out of 5 doctors recommend it.
Nobody likes to think that they're influenced by advertising, but especially – and if you want to take a classic example where its impact is going to be monumental, you look at our governor's race, because – on both sides of the aisle, you've got nobody there with any significant name recognition. So the first thing you're going to hear, first thing a lot of people, just to take the one example that's out there, the first thing a lot of people heard about Mayor Steve Smith is, well, he was head of the Conference on Mayors, and that's a liberal group, and they're against Obamacare. You know,
right?
Or they're for?
They're for
okay.
Obamacare. Right.
And the audience here is Republican primary voters who we know. You know, don't like that. So if you don't know from Adam who Steve Smith is, if you're a Republican primary voter, you probably tuck that off and say, well, you know, I don't let advertising influence me, but I sure don't like Obamacare. And he seems that he does.
OK,
even though he says he's against it.
How is it different? And I want to know this with Citizens United in the McCutcheon's case. How is it different now than if I turn on Fox News? Because we're going to talk about Benghazi for an
sure.
hour. And then let's go over to MSNBC and they're going to have pictures of Obama with halos around. How is that different? How is that different? We have cable news networks dedicated to Republican, dedicated to Democrat agendas.
Well, number one, at least you know who they are. If you watch one of those networks, you know where they're coming from.
If you know it's anti-somewhere, if you know it's anti-Scott Smith, you know it's somebody who's running against Scott Smith. I mean, let's be real.
Everybody who's running against Scott Smith has said, no, it's not us.
Well,
it's this other group.
Of course.
And the problem with it being this other group is they can get really, really nasty. If you as a candidate attack me as a candidate,
mm-hmm.
and it's a demonstrable lie, I can come back and say, listen, this guy lied.
Okay.
But if you have a third party do it and they throw a lot of mud at me,
mm-hmm.
and if I can mostly get, you know, convince people that's mostly untrue, a little bit of it sticks and none of it sticks to you. I think that's the point of it, is there's no accountability back to the person on whose behalf it was done.
Has there ever been? I mean, recent history. Because let's talk about union money in politics. Okay, let's go to the other yep. side of the fence here. Because let's be real. When we're talking about the Koch brothers, we're talking mm-hmm. about that kind of thing. We're talking about the Republicans. When we talk about the Soroses and that's the other side, right? These are mm-hmm. the financiers, I would say, of both sides of the political spectrum. Why is this different now that we have two Supreme Court rulings? What makes it different?
We had a period when it was pretty good before all these external things came, when we had a period where if you're running against me, you have to go on that ad. At the end of the ad somewhere, your voice has got to be on there and say, I endorse this.
I'm Mike Russell, and I support
this message.
Right.
So in other words, you're accountable for what that message said, and I think that's a good thing. Because if that message is demonstrably untrue, then you should have to pay for that. In the public mind. Now you got third parties do it. You can get away with almost anything.
They've been doing it for decades.
Not at this level.
Of course it was going to evolve. Of course it was going to get bigger. You give any of these clowns an inch, they're going to take a mile. And they've done nothing but prove that for over 235 years.
In some of these campaigns now, 80 or 90% of the total money spent is these third party groups. And
right.
it never used to be anywhere near approaching that.
So what the Supreme Court basically said is it's legal.
It's speech, they
say. Not good, but it's legal. doesn't make our democracy any better, but it's speech.
It's
why is everybody crying then?
Because in effect, what it says is it's opened the doors to more or less purchasing elections because you can. Now, the only one, the only election you probably can't purchase is the presidency, because both sides are armed to the teeth. And by the time somebody gets to run for president, you got a pretty good idea who they are.
Okay. So let's talk about the presidency really quick here, because we have Hillary's running. Can we just move forward with that as a think tank exclusive? Right. Hillary's going to run.
I don't think it's an exclusive.
Hillary's going to run. Okay, our philosophy then. Hillary's going to run. She's now gallivanting around the country on a borrowed jet and getting $250,000 a pop for a 10-minute speech. If that isn't just as shady as somebody running a commercial ad saying that Chris Christie closed a bridge and killed babies, I don't know what is. It's the same. Campaign finance has been messed up for decades, and we just haven't seen it. Do you see what I mean? It'd be easy for me as a politician to go do a fundraiser for someone else or a charity event where my speaking fee was $75,000 and I'm running for governor. I could amass a fortune running up, and no one has donated to my campaign because I've never announced officially. You see, it's always been that way. My concern is, why is everybody freaking out?
Again, the enormity of it. Notoriety has always gotten you decent speaker fees. If you're somebody that people want to see, they'll pay to see you. You can get some pretty nice speaker fees.
Exactly.
But the level of this outside spending is absolutely unprecedented.
Sure.
That's what's different. It's the enormity of it.
So I think the hope here, I would say the hope that the sunlight is the best disinfectant.
We have no sunlight.
No, but we're starting to, as we're seeing these Supreme Court rulings come down. We're like, hey, whoa, wait a second. I'm talking about we as the normal voter, the average everyday citizen. Hey, wait a second. What do you mean? Money is, but you're giving money personhood is essentially what you're doing. You're making spending money free speech. Hey, wait a second. That makes our political process kind of muddy. Right.
Yeah. Oh, so hopefully democracy for sale.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that if we could paint any light in this is that, hey, hopefully we start to understand that and start to speak out against
it. Also says our votes are not all equal. The one with more money in his pocket has a lot more vote.
Vote? I would take it something bigger than that. Can I just get,
sure. Let me,
I would think it's bigger than that. Your free speech, because you have more money than me, you have freer speech than I do.
A whole lot more freer. Right.
Do you see what I mean? Your speech is more free than mine.
Yep. Because if I have that megaphone and you don't, and that megaphone can broadcast all over the world or hit you with 8,000 repetitions of the same ad, yeah, that's a whole lot more free.
Give me your takeaway from Lori.
You know, she's following this stuff about as closely as anybody. I think we
like
saw
a hawk, that
I
girl.
Think we saw the first salvo of this election. There's going to be many, many more to come. This one is juicy just because it's standing out there alone and nothing else has hit yet. It will certainly. The stuff on
the Republican side, because there's one Democrat right now, right?
And his problem is going to be anonymity. It's the Hillary problem. You know, he'll get
it's worse than the problem.
His problem after the primary will be, what was his name now?
Yeah, right. Okay, now I see what you're saying. Yeah,
so that's
okay.
His problem.
Okay.
The Republicans' problem will be if they slice one another up and they're too bloodied. But whoever wins, I guarantee you this, in September, we will know who that person is. We'll
yes.
know his name.
But he's going to be very bloodied. It's going to be like a prize fighter
if
in the 11th round.
If somebody pulls out a head, then they may back off a little bit. But if it's really close, then it's liable to get nasty.
MikeO'Neill.org for blogs, articles, and op-eds. O'NeillResearch.com. Check him out. Michael J. O'Neill on Twitter. On behalf of Dr. Mike O'Neill, I'm Mike Russell. Thank you to Lori Roberts for joining us. It's been The Think Tank right here on News Talk 92.3 KTAR.